On this episode of the InsurTech Geek Podcast, we're talking about making insurance simple, proactive, and personal with Brian Gabe from CSAA Insurance Group.
The InsurTech Geek Podcast, powered by JB Knowledge, is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. We'll be interviewing guests and doing deep dives into specific tech we see changing the industry. We're taking you on a journey through insurance tech, so enjoy the ride and geek out.
Terra, our sponsor for this week's episode, is driving innovation in claims and policy management. Discover how Terra empowers insurers with benchmarking tools, claims and policy management tools, and an ancillary service marketplace at terra.insure. That's T-E-R-R-A.insure.
And we are back with another great episode of the InsurTech Geek Podcast. Got my main man, my co-host, Rob Galbraith. Rob, how's it going?
It's going well, James. Man, I can't believe we're already into February. It's time is already flying in 2024.
It's the way it works, bro. You know, the days are long and the years are short. It's when you're having fun and working, being productive and doing great things, time flies by. So no surprise there. It's winter time in Texas, which means it's down into the 60s. It's all good. I think we had a week of cold and everybody's like, oh, I hate winter. And I'm like, dude, it's like 1 week. Chill out. And with us, we've got Brian Gabe. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys for having me on today.
Yeah. And where are you joining us from?
I am joining you from the San Francisco Bay Area, where our winter is in full effect. We've got some pretty serious storms here, but serious for California. So, you know, we're doing just fine.
So nothing new: flooding, mudslides, wildfires, earthquakes, the huge.
Yeah. I'm in the northern part of the state, so we're not getting the hammering that Southern California is getting right now. And thinking about those folks down there who are definitely experiencing some pretty extreme weather for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining the podcast. Appreciate you being on today. You know, we always like talking about insurance. We love talking about technology and, of course, the convergence of those two, InsurTech. But before we do that, we're going to talk about you and your background. Looks like you went and got your undergrad at Berkeley, just not too far away from you there in the Bay Area. And then you got your MBA from my co-host's arch rival school. I got a Michigan State guy here in Rob Galbraith. You went to the school that my daughter wants to go to. She's a junior at a performing arts school, and University of Michigan actually has the top musical theater program in the country as far as feeder to Broadway. So she very much wants to go to UMich. So we say go blue all the time. And of course you say go blue a lot this year with them winning a national championship, Rob. I mean, it's got to hurt a little bit, huh?
We just beat them in basketball.
He's like, on to another sport. And of course, promptly lost the head coach to the pros because he wants to win a Lombardi trophy and he couldn't quite pull it off at the 49ers. And so, and Brian, are you a pro football fan? I mean, I see a football in the background there.
Yeah. You know, so I'm a huge college football fan. So, yes, okay. the national championship from Michigan. Fantastic. I first and foremost, undergrad from UC Berkeley. So Cal Bears, my true love, and you know, definitely love watching Michigan kind of take home the big trophy this year. So I certainly don't, you know, excited for the Super Bowl as well and the pro game, but mostly it's about following the players that I love from college. So I was
do we not call college football pro because like a lot of their players make way more than the NFL players now. I mean, we got Aggie football recruits making $1 million a year right now, and we got the league minimum and the NFL's below that. So I mean, we got college guys making more than the pros.
That's right. I saw a comparison to sort of Arch Manning at the backup at Texas versus Brock Purdy, the starter in San Francisco 49ers playing in the Super Bowl, and that system's obviously got to get worked on a little bit.
Well, it might also be a wake up call that college football has more fans than the NFL. Because it does. There's more teams in more places, more regional and more loyalty. So I don't know. We'll see what goes on there. So you had some interesting internships, and then you moved on to moving into consulting for a few years. Several years in consulting. What led you into consulting, and then what led you from consulting into insurance?
Yeah. I would say like many folks sort of post undergrad, I didn't necessarily kind of know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And so the appeal of consulting was, get a diverse experience, sort of cut your teeth on the basic kind of business skills, whether that's, PowerPoint, Excel, whatnot, client engagement, all that sort of stuff. So I really kind of enjoyed, I did that for quite a while. I think I did it for about 6-7 years, before ultimately, my last client was actually, was AAA, and joined them full time, just shy of 10 years ago right now.
Awesome. And what appealed to you about insurance? What were you excited about in the space?
I think insurance is one of those things that it's obviously a long-standing industry. Been stood the test of time, and yet at the same time, I think right now is and in the last 10 years and I think going into the future is a very kind of pivotal moment for the industry. The assets for which kind of are underlying the insurance policies have changed substantially, and the insurance policies need to change accordingly. In some cases, have changed accordingly. I'm excited to kind of talk about some of those examples today, but. But in my, whether it's kind of the influx of capital that has kind of spurred a lot of innovation in the space, or whether it is the changing underlying assets that have changed, and I think it's a fascinating time to be in our industry today.
Yeah, I mean, do you view insurance as changing more now than it did 100 years ago? Like, do you think that, for several hundred years, let's say that modern insurance is what, 400 years old, roughly? And before that, the Babylonians invented all this with bottomry contracts 3,000 years ago. So insurance isn't new. Yeah. It's been around a long time as a financial product. But would you say that for the last, 2 to 3 decades, things have evolved more rapidly than before?
That's sort of hard to say, because if we're going back to the Babylonians, I would say they would argue that their times were changing quite quickly too. So if in the grand scheme of things, perhaps you could argue that there were kind of very rapid changes perhaps early on, and then there was perhaps a steady state for a period of time. I mean, I'm thinking about it from, let's say, the personal automobile perspective, right? It's kind of my our bread and butter at AAA. But from the personal life kind of auto perspective, I think about, for example, the changing trends we're seeing right now around kind of like things like folks getting their driver's license at different ages than they had before, the technology that's embedded in vehicles, the advent of autonomous technology, like all of these type of things, I think are having kind of larger scale impacts, or will have larger scale impacts in the coming future. And so I think at a macro level, perhaps over, let's say long periods of time, yeah, there's probably been many periods like this. And yet this is also kind of one of those critical moments.
I think personally, I think that all industries are constantly being disrupted by all things, if that makes sense. In a capitalistic society, right? So let's exclude socialism and communism, because they have government control and the pace of change grinds to a halt, and then it's a bit of a different thing. But in modern capitalism, the economy evolves very quickly, because new entrants and competitors are constantly entering the market, and they're trying to tear down pieces of what other people have built to do it better so they can get market share and revenue and profit, right? Like that's just like the essence of capitalism. And so they're always scrambling for ways to mitigate their risk. And a lot of them are engaging in new activities and doing things in new ways. Well, that's always been the case. It's interesting that we talk so much about disruption. I think we're kind of talking about technology or technological disruption because it's allowing us to distribute insurance products in a very different way. It's allowing us to measure and manage things that we weren't able to do before, which is probably, in my opinion, accelerating the pace of change. Of course, you know a little bit about auto insurance, I suppose, huh?
Absolutely, yeah.
And automotive is... Well, let's put it this way. I used to attend Peter Diamandis' conferences on the future, right? He had these. He still has them. It's like future-looking conferences where he helps you set your moonshot transformative purpose. And they talk about, you know, mass disruption. And they were predicting that cars would all be fully autonomous by 2018. And we're sitting here in 2024, and we had planned on a fully autonomous fleet of ride-hailing cars. That's what Diamandis, Ray Kurzweil, a lot of these futurists were saying. All cars will be autonomous. None of us will own them anymore. We'll all use fractional ride-hailing services, and we'll just hail a car. It'll drive itself to us, pick us up. We're in 2024. We're 6 years past their time horizon. That still hasn't happened. COVID driving dipped temporarily, and then severity went through the roof. And so it's been a really turbulent time for auto insurance, not just because of technology, but also because of technology, and partly because technology didn't meet expectations. And so now we have like Cruise from GM getting their permit pulled in your town of San Francisco, which basically sunk their entire business, right? So it's an interesting time in insurance. How are you guys grappling with that technological disruption of the insurance business?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, from a technological standpoint, I guess I kind of think a little bit about technology is on full display every year at CES. So this last year, this last month, I attended CES. I think this was my 10th time. You know, what I think is really interesting about kind of that experience is it's stuff that is not generally available in the market today, right? And if and when these technologies do come to market, it often takes years. And to your point about, for example, autonomous vehicles, the shifting and the time horizon and the kind of way in which these technologies are displayed does evolve quite a bit, right? So I sort of think about, you know, some of the stuff you were talking about with kind of how the futurists kind of talk about the landscape of the future as sort of a blending of real progress with kind of future potential, right? Doesn't mean that future that future potential is less exciting or whatnot if these things don't necessarily come to fruition. It means that things have morphed, the environment has changed, and I think that's kind of constantly going on. So, I think about, for example, even like the artificial intelligence impact upon like many different industries. And going back to CES, this last month. There was a big emphasis on the emergence of AI, particularly the generative AI chips were really on full display. And I don't know about you, but I continue to sort of pick up on the tension between kind of the AI for good and AI for harm that kind of exists in our society today. Everything from kind of government and regulation to sort of the management of AI are all going to be, I think, really critical in sort of this space. You know, going back to kind of what you're talking about with, let's say, kind of the fact that, yes, the advent of ADAS and even EVs as part of that are still, I would say, on full display. You know, the continuing sort of growth of vehicles across all different types and embedding ADAS and autonomous features into vehicles, that's happening as we speak, right? Whether it's fully autonomous or whether it's, advancements of in-vehicle kind of technology. I also think even software-defined vehicles are part of that, right? Cars today are really rolling computers, and OEMs and outside suppliers are providing sort of a, you know, an array of apps and features that go into this. I kind of think about it like a lot like, you know, automotive companies are trying to be sort of the iPhone or sort of the airline business models in hopes of having customers pay them sort of, you know, monthly subscriptions for various apps and sort of functionality within vehicles. That's going to drastically change how we think about automotive insurance and how, you know, all of the different, whether it's even the things like, for example, in Europe that are happening right now around kind of in-cabin monitoring and how, you know, what impact that will have on, let's say, the U.S. market. So a whole lot of changes, and it's definitely an exciting time.
Yeah, Brian. So thinking about, you know, your time now at CSAA, you've been there, as you mentioned, over or almost a decade, first as a corporate strategy leader, later and currently are a managing principal of strategy and innovation. So you've been kind of in this strategy innovation, right, looking really forward and helping your company, right, navigate, right, what the future holds. So just wondering, can you discuss maybe the changes that you spearheaded over the years, and then how have those like played itself out in terms of your corporate strategy?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned, I prior to kind of joining AAA, I was in a management consulting role. My last client was actually AAA. I I did a number of projects for at the time the club the member club that serves our California, Northern California, Nevada, and Utah members. So after a handful of engagements at AAA, I started to realize what a great place it was and how focused sort of everybody was on in the organization on the ultimate customer, our member. So I really wanted to be part of that, and I joined back in 2014 to help create at the time what was a relatively new corporate strategy group. So alongside some amazing colleagues, we were tasked with sort of helping a 100 plus year old insurance company navigate some of these really interesting times that we've been speaking about today. So I worked along, you know, alongside with our business partners to draft how we envisioned CSAA evolving to meet the needs of our members, not just today, but in the future. And it wasn't really, I would say, long before that team was advocating for a group that would seek to bring in some of these amazing technologies that we've discussed. Over the years, we partnered with a lot of great companies, from sort of early stage startups in the insurtech space, or, you know, ultimately mature players as well. And I'm happy to kind of get into a few examples of how our team has kind of supported that effort over the years. I would say that you know, there's one example that is a little bit older now, but it's one of the examples I'll share started with a challenge of kind of the rental car process within insurance companies. At the time, and in some cases still, it's a rather cumbersome process. I would say our within our own kind of NPS surveys and things like that, we kind of had this realization that this was a real challenge within our business, and customers necessarily didn't, at the end of the day, want a rental car per se. They just simply wanted to get from point A to point B and multiple times. So as an idea to solve for that problem, our team, we piloted a program with Lyft where we partnered to offer credits as an alternative to traditional rental vehicles as part of the claims process. So our team, you know, this is a ways back, and we had actually worked, we began working with Lyft before they were probably a household name. Because we ultimately knew our customers didn't necessarily need that rental car in all the cases, right? So we piloted this in partnership with our claims team, and we were kind of the first to offer this type of offering to insurance customers. I can go into a bunch of other examples, whether it's kind of, you know, maybe I'll share one more in the interest of time here. But also a little ways back, but we have a longstanding partnership with InsurTech Cape Analytics. We began working with Cape when they were substantially smaller than they are today, a handful of data scientists, really trying to determine if they could, if they could figure out if houses in Florida have pool covers or not, right? And that's a very important thing for Florida insurers. I don't doubt that. We don't write in Florida. And so while that is an important challenge, we were facing a really big challenge with regards to kind of roof quality and wind hail states, right? So we partnered with them pretty early on to, you know, help better understand how to underwrite roofs, and subsequently, you know, invested in the company and have leveraged that technology ever since. So those are a couple examples of kind of how we've partnered with both mature players and, you know, early startups to kind of bring new technologies to our members.
Awesome. That's exciting. Like, what do you think your biggest challenges have been? Like, let's talk about the flip side of this. Like, where did things go wrong? Or maybe not wrong, because let's do, fail, learn is the loop that a lot of us really try to ascribe to. So what have your biggest learning lessons been that you thought something would be really... I'm a 5 or 6 timer at CES as well. So I go to Consumer Electronics. I mean, I'm sure you've been more times than that, but I think I've been 5 or 6 times and I love it. Super fun. I go there, I get super jazzed up, super excited, super motivated about the future of technology. And then I come back to the trough of reality once I get back from CES. So, I mean, what did you get super hype about that you tried out and it just wasn't all it was cracked up to be, or there were unexpected things that kept it from being a real winner?
Yeah, if I could count the number. There's a lot, right? The reality is that in many cases, in this type of business where the unknowns are great, you're going to be wrong a lot, frankly. And I'm not afraid to kind of admit that. One example that I sort of think about also from a while back, there was a big push a number of years ago in the industry to leverage drones for exterior home claims, and like many other insurance companies, we had an effort in this space, and we tried to figure out, like, okay, look, what are the different use cases? How can we bifurcate this? There were a lot of external companies also in this space offering services for kind of on-demand drone inspections or things like that. And I would say that was an area. And so we went out and bought our own drone and tested it on a bunch of stuff as well. And I would say that there were some really positives out of that. I think I frankly learned a whole lot more about our kind of claims processes for homeowners claims. But I also learned some limitations of these technologies, right? And not to say that this technology will not be kind of widely available and applicable in its use case someday, but at that time and at this time, I would say kind of the image resolution, kind of pixelization challenges with, for example, let's say identifying hail damage on roofs, right? Isn't necessarily at kind of that level to be able to make those critical determinations. So again, one of many examples, but I would say there's a bunch of stuff out there that you got to try, and you got to be efficient, right? You have to go out, you have to test and learn as quickly as possible so you can keep testing and learning on the next thing, right? So that's an example, I would say, of something where we got out there, we tested it, we learned, and we pivoted.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, you have to pivot so often. I mean, we have countless cases of stuff that we've rolled out. We really thought claims benchmarking would be popular. That people would want to know, that TPAs and carriers would want to know when their average cost per claim, number claim, total incurred were higher than average for the type of client and state, right? So they could see like the line of business, type of client, like industry and state. So when you can get it specific enough that you're comparing, you know, something against something similar to see if you have a higher severity, higher frequency, total, you know.
Sure.
Turns out none of them wanted to know. And we didn't know until we got like 3 years into the project. And and I call this now the benchmark paradox. That's what I call it, because the worst performers started dropping out of the benchmark and contesting the data. And we would prove that the data was accurate. Like, we would show them the supporting data and source data. It was an anonymized benchmark, so we could get all these different TPAs and carriers to submit it. So the bottom ones kept dropping out. The worst ones kept going because they didn't like the news. The emperor didn't have clothes on, and they were selling that they were the best ones in the market. And the reality was their average cost per claim, number claim, total incurred were the worst. They didn't want to hear the news. And so it's fascinating, because human behavior always interferes, maybe not always, but almost always interferes with some of the best intentions on technology and transparency and oversight, the things that we should really care about. You know, it's remarkable, the law of unintended consequences, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's an entirely fair point. And to the extent that it makes sense, like, that sometimes bad news can be hard to hear, and sometimes there are folks who necessarily don't want to hear it. But at the end of the day, whether it's that example or others, this is what kind of makes organizations better, makes them more kind of customer driven, so I appreciate the effort.
Exactly. Rob?
So Brian, we talked a little bit on the auto side about kind of the transformation that's happening in the mobility space. So just kind of curious, what opportunities are you seeing today? How are you thinking about it? And I know you've talked about Mobilitas in the past, so how does that fit in?
Yeah, you know, I think that sort of customer preference around mobility, well, they're always changing, right? We touched on kind of a few examples of that earlier on, but some of these trends, everything from kind of the teenagers getting licenses later to the advancements of technology, you know, at CSAA, we've been writing personal lines auto for over 100 years. But what in 100 years from now, right? Will we still leverage vehicles the same way? Will we own cars at all? Right? I know these questions have been asked before, and I think that that's the type of conversations that we've had with our leadership over time at CSAA. And if you follow some of these trends out a ways, you find that that insurance today is structured with pretty hard lines, right? Hard lines between, let's say, personal and commercial, and that might not be the way that this needs to be thought about in the future, right? So yes, to your question, we did create Mobilitas as a net new business specifically to address the needs of new mobility companies. In fact, I'll share a little bit of history of Mobilitas, but in the future, I think it'd be fun if you guys had Julie Brown, who now leads that that division, on the podcast. I think she can generate some good insights for the group. So this is a business that we ultimately incubated within our innovation group a number of years ago. We started off by actually creating a product for subscription vehicles, right? Because at that time, that very much fell into this category of, the question of, is this commercial? Is this personal? Where does this kind of fit, right? And so for subscription vehicles, in for a little context, basically OEM is kind of bundling the lease of a vehicle alongside insurance, roadside assistance, maybe even DMV services, stuff like that. And selling it at a monthly cost. So we created this product specifically for the subscription vehicle market. That was our first entry into the market. And at that time, this business was being frankly treated as if they were rental cars, which rental cars are a pretty rough risk and a expensive risk. And at the same time, these cars were being driven by personal individuals for personal purposes. And so we started a cross-divisional team and kind of incubated this business for a number of years within the innovation team. Now it's its own line of business, as I mentioned, serving the needs of car subscription, things like transportation network companies such as Lyft, fleets, and other things. But this is an example of a business that didn't exist a number of years ago, and now, frankly, is a big part of our strategy.
I love it, Brian, because I think about really in insurance, you kind of touched on this. We've always been product centric in the past, right? So there's hard and fast, right? This is auto, this is home, this is renters, and then that split between personal and commercial. And where we're going, I think, is customer centric, right? But it's like we're getting there in fits and starts and trying to kind of evaluate, okay, forget our filed product lines. And there's, you know, regulatory reasons. I mean, there's reasons it's been product centric in the past, but so, okay, what is the customer need? Like, let's start there and kind of work our way back and then try to figure out, you know, how do we migrate over? And again, there's hurdles, there's challenges, but just love that example.
Awesome. So let's close with my my fave question. Except I'm gonna skew it towards CES. What was your favorite thing, like most exciting? Because like for me, the Chinese pavilions are always some of the most interesting booths to go to, like the small obscure ones in the back, not the mainline ones where you're seeing all the new curved or foldable TVs, but like the obscure booth on row 532 that has this new device that I've never even thought of. What was like the coolest thing or most exciting thing you saw at CES? Like just in general.
Well, I mean, I'd say the coolest, like funnest thing that I saw was the helicopter cars or the autonomous tractors. I mean, there's all kinds of fun stuff out there. I think, you know, what I also noticed that I think kind of has applicability, more kind of close in applicability though to sort of my business and the business of, let's say, auto insurance, for example, was really a bunch of technology that focused in on kind of in cabin monitoring, right? The notion, I mean, for example, a bunch of companies, Bosch notably, they introduced at CES kind of in-camera kind of radar systems that monitor to make sure folks are awake or not intoxicated, right? And I know they're not the first ones to come out with this type of technology. In fact, it's I think more commonplace in parts of Europe than it is here. But I think that kind of has, you know, while I'm all about the flying cars and the exciting things that are at CES, I'm also about kind of the stuff that's very applicable to kind of, you know, the next handful of years. My favorite part of, I think, James, similar to what you were talking about with kind of the back of CES, one of the parts of the back of CES is called Eureka Park. And it's where all the startups kind of go. I think they kind of offer reduced fees to enable kind of some of these smaller companies to get in. And in my experience, that's where the really interesting stuff is, right? Because it's not just prototypes of what the future could be, but it's kind of like here and now applicable stuff that you know, young and hungry companies are working on today.
Awesome. Yeah, I've been to that. It's been a couple of years. I think it's actually a few years. I think it's been 2019 was my last CES. I wanted to go this year and couldn't work out the scheduling because it's a great eye opener and it's a great brain opener. So thanks for the insight from that. We are at time. I really do appreciate your participation here and thanks for joining us. And it's great to hear what's going on with CSAA and all the wonderful things you're doing there. And as always, Rob, thank you for joining.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are giving me CES jealousy. I've never been, so I'll have to make a point to go somewhere. I know.
Rob,
that's
one of the few things. Well, I'll go. You come, and then we'll meet up with Brian, and he can be our tour guide.
Love it. I love it.
Awesome. Brian, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you and listener land for tuning in to Geek Out today, our interview with Brian Gabe from CSAA Insurance Group. Talk to you next week.
This has been the InsurTech Geek Podcast powered by JB Knowledge, jbknowledge.com. The InsurTech Geek Podcast is all about technology that's transforming and disrupting the insurance world. I've been your host, James Benham, that's jamesbenham.com, with co-host Rob Galbraith at endofinsurance.com. Thank you for joining us today. Look forward to meeting up again. We're taking you on a journey through InsurTech, so enjoy the ride and geek out.